Dark wings.
Dark words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 6, Episode 3. Oathbreaker.
Oathbreaker, breaker, one niner. This is the White Walker. Come back,
coming in loud and clear. White Walker, we're here for the third cast of this season.
Over, Oathbreaker, you got a boatload of Boltons on your six. Put the hammer down.
You guys running out of Smokey and the Bandit references here?
Yes.
Right here. Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
Mike Hergert.
Chris Voorhees.
Craig McCallie.
And Maya the Wonder Pup.
The very well-behaved Wonder Pup.
For now.
For the moment.
So, gee whiz, gang. How about that Tower of Joy sequence?
Busy night.
Yeah.
New material.
Heavy fresh stuff. Fresh. Yeah. Well, yeah. Some fresh, some...
Hints
of Feast for Crows.
Right, they're going back in book time again.
Sam and Gilly on the boat. I didn't think we would ever see that.
That was from Feast of Crows too, wasn't it?
That was a Feast for Crows. Yeah. But Sam and Gilly were traveling with Aemon.
And don't they go to Braavos first?
They do. They were traveling with the one sort of minstrel night's watchman.
Darion.
Oh yeah.
Whose job it was to recruit from the free cities, but instead he just drank and partied and was ineffectual. And I think actually Arya Stark stumbled across him and was affronted by his lack of keeping his Night's Watch oath. Perhaps a little bit thinking of her half brother John and was insulted that Man of the Night's Watch was partying in a brothel in Braavos, and she shut that shit down.
He ends up in what, like a canal, falling in or getting stabbed or something, or into the canal or something?
A girl fucked his shit up.
Yep. She still remembers, though. That's...
Well, so it's always been a thing. I mean, we're jumping around here, but... So Arya managed to... It's one thing to fool the waif and to fool Jaqen H'ghar that she has shed her former self and now she's truly no one. She drank of the water, the mystical water that kills some people.
Now more mystical than ever.
Yeah. Now with more blindness healing properties, she's pure enough in her sort of faceless man quest that she can survive that.
So you think she's fooling? You think she's not no one? Do you think she's still Arya?
Do you think she's someone?
In this moment, it has to be true that she's no one, or I think that would have killed her.
The water knows, right?
You think.
But I think at some point in the future, when Arya's in Westeros and has an opportunity to cross another name off her list, then we'll know for sure.
Right.
And her list did get pretty short.
Yeah. So was it the waif who was like, oh, that's kind of a short list. Are you sure there's no one else?
Well, she kind of killed the rest of them already, didn't she?
Yeah.
Or they've been killed.
Yeah.
For all a girl knows. she doesn't know that Sir Gregor is dead. And they referred to him as Sir Gregor.
Yeah,
this week.
Right. First time. Yeah. No, Robert Strong.
Right.
No, the leader of the watch or the guard. Pure realness.
Indeed. And we got to peek behind the scenes a little bit with Qyburn and the Whisperers. That's something we were speculating about last week.
The little birds.
And the scene with the tall tale teller that frustrated you so much, Chris. And yeah. I theorized that basically Cersei would want anybody that has a bad word about her to get their comeuppance. And, I mean, it's such almost like...
Such a great way to run the kingdom.
Yeah. And basically, wasn't like, he was like, and what happened to your dad? Was it the kid's dad? That he, I thought it was like, oh, we'll never see him again.
Oh, yeah, something, the kid was being beaten by his father, apparently, and his father came to an ill end at Qyburn's machinations. Okay. And that's how he bought the boy's loyalty. Okay.
Was it the guy from who got killed last week? I don't feel like it was the boastful.
I don't think the boastful tall tale teller was also the beater of children.
He may have been.
Is that also part of Khaleesi's title?
The beater of children.
Boastful teller of tales.
Breaker of chains, beater of children.
Breaker of chains. Got Vyas Dothrak coming over the horizon.
I want to go the other direction.
Cal Smokey's coming on your rear.
Over.
Come back.
Coming on your rear, huh? Oh. Yeah. That's how those Dothraki like to do it, apparently.
Oh, my moon and stars. Vyas Dothrak is a little more epic looking, at least in the wide shot, right? I don't think we saw those kick-ass huge stallions forming the archway, too.
We've seen them in the opening, the CGI version of them.
Yeah,
I guess back to low budget season one, I don't think it was quite spectacular location. Sure, it was
different. They didn't even really have buildings. Like whatever that hall that they took her in, right? It looked like it.
But the chamber
more of an outdoor market than a city, really.
The Dosh Kalin, the room with the braziers, the braziers,
the burning thing,
the fire.
Is that meant to be the same set where Danny's brother got the crown of gold poured over his head? Is it possible?
I feel like that was the same location. That was a more intimate setting, I think.
Was that just out there in the Khalasar?
I think it was a tent, but it wasn't like
a
big hut.
Pillars and
no, I don't think so. Not that I remember.
Nor do I. But I think it's worth noting, that they've definitely upped the ante this season with the special effects. Like everything, like Pike last week looked pretty awesome. You know, it was a big tracking CGI shot with the stormy seas beneath and everything. I feel like that's a better looking view of that than we got in past seasons. And I think I read something about HBO has a featurette about shooting in Spain. And so they were going on and on about all these amazing locations that they found in Spain and the enthusiastic throngs of extras that have turned up to participate.
Like signed up to, like, I want to be an extra.
Did you watch that?
I think I've seen that before.
It's pretty cool. So really they've branched out and they've found all these great locations. I mean that the Tower of Joy is a real place in Spain somewhere. Like that building is
right,
the actual
tower.
Building. Yeah. It looks just like that. So that's cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen that featurette, but yeah.
Well, check it out, everybody. HBO, go now.
So not now, we're in the middle of a podcast.
What do we think of the Tower of Joy sequence? We knew it was coming, right?
Great scene. Really different from the way it was presented in the books, but
was it?
I don't think they...
Well, I guess we never got to witness the whole encounter in the books.
Right.
It was just recounted by...
Ned Stark.
Ned Stark's comments.
And he did mention that it wasn't he sort of downplayed the big victory sort of nature of it because there were five or six of them against two. But it wasn't quite as cold, you know... Stabbed in the back quite.
Was it truly just the two Kingsguard against the pack of like six dudes?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was.
But they each had two swords, so.
Yeah.
Like four.
That was a good skirmish. That was well choreographed and it was neat to watch. And Sir Arthur Dayne was genuinely impressive, especially when it was him versus four.
Yeah.
And he's got those two blades.
I'm surprised it was just called the Sword of the Morning when he had two. Should be swords. Can we add an S to that?
One of them was the Sword of the Evening. And he kept that in his pants.
Okay. Ooh.
Hey, yo.
And well casted, the kid looks like a young Sean Bean.
I think so. A little home, a little homelier.
He's kind of doing the little thing with his lip, sort of kind of mugging like you
think,
Sean Bean.
You think he watched The Lord of the Rings a few times to prep for this? One does not simply walk into the Tower of Joy.
And I even think he did his sort of fighting style is the same way. Very reminiscent of the way Ned looked when he's fighting the Kingslayer in streets.
Yeah,
of,
yeah.
Oh, we did get to see him in one actual skirmish. I was thinking that for all of Ned's, you know,
alleged
greatness, that he was a, you know, a beleaguered bureaucrat for most of his short-lived stint in season one.
Lucky him.
Well, so
we get the skirmish.
I was feeling Bran's frustration with getting pulled away by Max von Sydow there at the end. I was just
we heard the baby cry.
Well, that we heard the mother cry, or we heard a woman's cry.
Yeah, was it a
woman's
baby?
Cry? I thought it was a baby.
I thought I heard a scream for sure.
I thought it was just, I mean, that was, I think that's a midwife freaking out at the, you know, the mother having birth-giving problems. But we only know, inferring that from the book. It's a great, great fucking teaser, cliffhanger-y flashback moment. I mean, I like how they're playing this out in like pieces throughout this season.
Mm-hmm.
If there's, I think, I don't know if they're going to jump right back to where we.
We might not see it next week from the previews that they showed. I think
we're getting away from Bran next week, probably. Yeah, but they can drop him anywhere because he's sort of
self-contained,
off to the side, continuity wise. He can just come and go, and he's just exploring the past now anyway. So. Although in the first episode we did see him in the present and see what Mira and Hodor were up to. We might, maybe they'll jump back to some Hodor backstory before they get around to following up on the Tower of Joy resolution.
More Hodor backstory.
And we get the point reinforced that, I mean, Bran's pretty frustrated. He's like, just let me stay in here. And Max is like, you're not going to be here forever. You're not going to be an old man in a tree like me, but he also has to learn everything.
Well, that's going to take a
minute. Yeah.
What about Ned hearing Bran calling from across the chasm of time?
Oh, well, that may have just been the wind.
Well, no, there's something to that about the ability of the Green Seers to impact the past. I seem to remember that. Something about related to... the myths of the old gods, you know, the way the wildlings would talk about the gods talking through the trees, you know, so him saying it was the wind, it was the wind, but the Greenseer is using the wind to communicate or to impact that timeline.
It's kind of far out. I don't know that it was sort of explicitly hinted at any point in the books that, well, I mean, the whole time travel aspect of it is kind of a, you know, an invention of the TV show, I think.
Did J.J. Abrams direct this? Come on.
Bran can go back and change the past. He can save everyone.
Well, it's not strictly time travel, but the books, he sees the past and he sees the future.
Right. But it's got a very Ghost of Christmas Past element to it right now.
Because they're walking around in it as opposed to just observing.
Right.
When's Tiny Tim going to show up?
He just got hung at Castle Black.
No.
Ooh. Ollie Oxenfree.
He kind of deserved it.
Yeah, he kind of did. I kind of hated that little shit.
He fell in with a bad crowd.
Yep. He had no father figure. The wildlings killed him.
You know.
Yeah.
There were only four of them? Weren't there more? Or the other ones are dead? Or were there not?
They must have been the... most egregious are those. Maybe they're the four that actually pierced John with the blade.
Maybe,
but there was like a gang of six or eight.
Yeah.
Of them.
Oh, there was a bunch of people standing.
I assumed it was an Et Tu Brute situation where everybody had to take a turn.
Right.
Maybe some of them got killed by 1-1 last week. You know,
1-1
smashed into the wall. Whoa.
Yeah.
We have an espresso machine in the house now.
That's a foamy beer.
So, should we talk about the whole Jon Snow thing?
No.
No? Okay, yeah. What else was there?
All right, the whole Jon Snow thing.
Yeah, okay.
So, we started the episode, it occurred to me, well, I mean, when we saw the title of the episode, Oathbreaker, I was thinking, oh, is there a sword called Oathbreaker? No, we know Brienne Oathkeeper. Of Tarth has got Oathkeeper.
And you think it references... The
Valyrian steel blade derived from Ned Stark's Valyrian steel blade.
Mm-hmm. Icebreaker.
Is that Littlefinger's sword?
So we think it's just John is the Oathbreaker, but
he didn't got the break loophole.
He died. He's done.
Oh, his watch has ended. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking
off on a technicality.
Classic loophole. Melisandre probably could do a brisk business there at Castle Black.
Yeah.
You guys want out?
Let me.
You talk to me.
I stab you and then I bring you back to life.
She didn't have a line, did she?
She had lines.
Did she?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she was.
Oh, yeah. She was going on and on, and said, Davos was like, do you want to give us a minute here before you start laying a head trip on this kid?
Right. Well, remember she was intensely interested. What? Tell me about the afterlife. Come on, hit me. And he's like,
nothing.
And she was like,
oh, totally boring.
But then she was like, there's some reason that the Lord of Light brought you back.
And one of you guys predicted that she would compare Jon to Stannis. Or say, like, well, guess it wasn't Stannis. But
she came right out and said it.
Yeah. So good on
you.
You
were the prince that was promised.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole Tower of Joy, movement on the Tower of Joy revelation front.
She's had a good 2 weeks, including the last of her leech people being offed. Wasn't that last week? Balon.
No, Gendry's still alive.
No, Balon... Who were the leeches for?
Joffrey? Leeches were for Joffrey,
Balon, the false kings.
Okay. Robb Stark.
Yeah, so Balon it finally came true.
The final leech.
Yeah, the final leech. And then now this, like, she's having a banner couple weeks.
She's going to...
Banner Fortnite.
Yeah, she's going to be all full of herself next week, or when next see her.
She was still kind of, she was still pretty kind of... Dejected though, like I mean, she's like, oh,
she was shocked. Kinda, she was like, was.
But I still feel like, oh, when he told her that there was nothing in the afterlife, she was trying to be like, well, there must be some reason why you're back here. So
he just wasn't a believer. Believers don't see anything in the afterlife. I'm afraid
non-believers don't see anything in the afterlife.
Yeah, is that what, that's what I meant to say.
Yes,
Chuck's my interpreter.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a bummer. I guess I was in that moment hoping that Jon's resurrection would give us some hint of the afterlife, or at least Westerosi style, but the whole nothing, and just, I don't know about Jon Snow's whole resurrection. I feel like it ought to have, there should have been a cost. Like I said before, when Daenerys tried to bring back Khal Drogo, there was a cost.
We don't know. There might be a cost to his material self that we are not completely aware of yet. We've only seen him chop a piece of rope since he's been back. I mean, he was... I know what you mean by cost, but like someone else, some other cost.
Well, not even just that, but himself diminished in some way.
Well, he could have been down the stairs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And his wounds didn't close Wolverine style.
Yeah. Tormund said his penis was small, so.
But that was a problem from before.
Okay.
Pre-existing condition.
Not covered.
If any girls are listening right now, they're like, his penis isn't small. I'm sure it's not small. I'm sure it's fine or better than fine.
They know his abs and ass crack are looking good, so.
I thought that one of the showrunners was going to say, like when he was talking about, very well said, all everything they said inside the episode. I thought they're going to be like, Jon Snow's ass, am I right? I was just waiting for him to say it. He didn't say it.
Exquisitely sculpted.
We thought the scene was too talky, and we just wanted the gravity of the moment.
Of Jon Snow's.
Just to linger on his naked body. Where is Jon Snow going to go? What's he doing? What's his deal?
He's just going to walk out, man.
I didn't see that coming, but we Could have predicted it.
I see a Ramsay Jon Snow collision.
Well,
Jon Snow doesn't really have much of an army, I guess, unless he takes the wildlings with him.
But the wildlings are meant to be 100,000 strong. Just because we only see 20 dudes standing
around the courtyard. Are they all, are they all inhabiting the gift? Is that where they're at now?
That's where they're supposed to be.
All of them?
All the ones they let through. All the ones that they didn't slaughter before they changed their mind and opened the gates to them.
And some of them probably left. But you'd think there'd be more than 20 guys and a giant. Well, if there's got to be at least half of them left.
I mean, we saw a big crowd.
Of course, it doesn't matter. Ramsay's like Snow Ninja of the North. It's, all he needs is one pony and, you know, a helper, and he can take out the whole army.
I think it's all downhill from here on out for Ramsay Snow or Lord Bolton.
Right.
I think he's had all of the wins he's going to get with his philosophy on life.
I liked and Umber's, how to get ahead. Umber wasn't fucking around.
I'm not going to kneel. I'm not going to kiss your hand.
Fuckers, yes.
Fuck everything. And
you I brought you a present.
Yeah. Well, it's good leverage.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool that they, I mean, because Lord Umber was Robb Stark's most steadfast supporter. The Umbers were right up there, like number one on the Stark's list of loyal houses. So the idea that the Umbers have switched, I like the way they put the spin on it that Umber's heir is more focused on wildlings than any of the other bullshit that's going on. And he's got an immediate threat, and he needs an immediate solution. And he's not going to kiss Ramsay's ass, but he's going to make a pragmatic choice and be a badass about it. So that's pretty cool. What's not cool is that he captured Osha and Rickon, killed Shaggy Dog, and turned him over to the worst monster in the world. So bad Umbers. And bad luck for fucking Rickon. I mean, in the books, I still hold out hope that there's going to be an awesome moment where Rickon and comes in like flying into battle on the back of Shaggy Dog,
right?
Bravely and flaming epically sword. Sword.
Still, though, you got to think. You know, I've been thinking for a long time that the direwolves are going to return to do something besides just.
Get killed
and just get beheaded and sewn one at a time. Dead bodies. Man, that's weak.
All right, so right before we started, we had a little direwolf head count.
Two.
As of this episode, we've lost Shaggy Dog.
Right. So we have,
and then the one we lost prior to that was Grey Wind at the Twins for the Red Wedding,
and Lady
in like the second episode of the show, almost, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
still
early.
Second or third.
Three out of six still alive.
Yep.
Nymeria presumably still roaming at the head of a huge pack of out of control wolves.
Terrorizing. They haven't done anything in the shows with that. That's all from the book.
I want to say, there was one scene where Arya appeared to have a warging dream. Where she was seeing things through the eyes of Nymeria, and she saw some wolves come upon two Lannister soldiers pissing at the edge of their war camp. Does that ring a bell?
That was...
Maybe.
That was at the same time when they were out in the tower in the lake, I think.
No, because that was all happening way up in the north. The Nymeria thing was happening in the Riverlands. It was around it was before Arya and Gendry had been captured and sort of became indentured servants of the mountain at what's the big
Harrenhal.
Harrenhal. Thank you. And that was season 2, season 3,
a long time ago.
Yeah, but so I mean, and they haven't followed up on it. But we've learned this season they'll go back and revisit some shit that we thought was way out of the picture.
Right.
So I mean, it's good.
Which tells you that things like Lady Stoneheart could be coming back. They could just,
who knows,
bring them out of nowhere if they drop Rickon off.
Because, all it takes is a previously on Game of Thrones flashback to Thoros of Myr and Beric Dondarrion, and then they're justified in just having them pop up in a scene. And, all right, you know who these guys are now.
Right.
Let's see what they've been
up to. Yeah, they don't really clue. I mean, they didn't clue anything in, though, on the Osha and Bran thing, which was good. Or the Osha and Rickon.
Oh, yeah. There was no tip. There was no
like where they'd been. Glimpse. No. Yeah.
But I knew as soon as they brought in two hooded figures that that's what it was. Like, oh, shit.
I really wanted those two to be gone until they could come back triumphant somehow. I mean, this was the worst possible way to reintroduce them.
Right. So we were also talking earlier about or wondering if we were going to get some reunited Stark kids somehow taking back the North, but
well,
seems unlikely at this point.
Sansa's out there, and she was headed to Castle Black.
Yeah.
And Jon is just now departing Castle Black. So those two could bump into each other, and they could get word somehow that Rickon is in danger. And so there's a Rickon rescue party.
Rickon rescue? Rickon say that five, ten times fast.
Bran seems like he's not quite done with his Jedi training, though.
He has a lot to learn, clearly.
Or a lot to remember.
Yeah.
Arya's getting pretty badass for still being young.
Right.
Yeah.
They definitely accelerated her progress this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like how they did the whole, like in the book, the whole like lion game where it's like, so basically, her and the waif would play the game where they have to try and tell lies and make them. And if they can tell that it's a lie, I mean, you smack each other or whatever. So
let's play it now.
Oh, okay,
all right.
What? Tell.
I can't reach you.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't.
That's
know
not.
If you're
that's
lying.
Not a lie. I can't.
What's? I don't know if I understand the waif's attitude. She just seems
jealous.
So petty and jealous. She's like, you know, you can't be Jaqen and H'ghar's favorite pupil because I am. But I mean, she's basically training Arya the whole time.
Yeah,
right.
But she's so dissatisfied at the outcome of her success.
Well, she should have thought about that.
I mean, if she's no one, then she's...
The pupil has become the teacher, Chuck.
Then there should be no emotional
attachment.
If
anything, she should feel satisfaction in doing the faceless god's bidding.
Making another... assassin.
Well, how would you feel if you were called the waif?
Has she been called the waif on the show? Or is that
how would you feel if you were only referenced as the waif?
Being the waif hasn't been cool since like the late 80s or early 90s.
I think the waif is happy to be on an HBO series.
Yep.
The waif has no name. A waif has no name?
A waif. The waif has no name.
Where the waif has no name.
We got a little Varys, kind of, he talks with the
throat slitter.
Yeah, and apparently finds out.
What was her name? Vala?
Vala, but, I mean, he basically kind of threatens her son, kind of is like.
Super passively.
Yeah.
We're not going to hurt him, but he's definitely.
He offered her a way out of her sort of hopeless situation in exchange for information.
But he also was... not so thinly veiled threats like if you don't give us the information.
I think
fucked.
He was just
probably
pragmatically pointing out
her
rock and hard place situation and offering an alternative.
Tyrion's little drinking game scene was fun.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Because doesn't he play the game earlier about words? If maybe in the book at least about like I'm gonna.
Oh yeah, he
tell
plays
me
that
something.
With Bronn.
They play with Bronn.
They play
with
Bronn. They play I never.
Oh,
they basically play I never, right?
Yeah.
I've never done
or
this.
Or I feel like he plays it in the book with maybe like with young Griff and those guys on the boat. I don't know.
Oh. You see, you've read that book more recently than the rest of us.
I still don't
remember. Does he play that with and as a means of trying to figure out who young Griff is? Because he suspects he's actually a Targaryen.
I think so. Maybe that's, yeah.
Does he figure that out somehow?
He does.
Okay.
Because he figures out that what's the Griff? What's his real name? Red something.
Well, John Connington, and then
Connington,
like a whatever. Aemon? No, Aegon Targaryen.
He's an Aegon, isn't he?
Is young Griff is Aegon?
Okay.
I think that's right.
It's an awful lot of unknown Targaryens coming out of the woodwork,
right?
Right.
But yeah, I mean the whole Tyrion scene. You kind of you get a little information, not really.
So are they maintaining control of the whole city just with the Unsullied?
Yes. And Mysa's rep. I mean, they established a new power dynamic, and all the freed slaves are sort of 50-50 on who they support, and all the old masters are pretty well gone underground or murdered.
And you find out that the Sons of the Harpy are basically funded by...
the other
Yunkai,
two slaver
Astapor,
cities.
And Volantis. So,
yeah, that's a pretty grim situation for them.
Because they're not set up for long-term governance there, I don't think, despite Tyrion's ability to No thanks.
I guess he'll just have to drink. He's going to have to control a couple dragons.
Well, he knows how to keep a besieged city afloat.
Yeah.
And, you know, make the most of a bad situation.
He's pretty all right with the coin because he had to manage the coin for a little while.
And Varys got his network of spies, unlike Qyburn, who has to build one.
Yeah, well, he...
With all the little waifs.
Give kids candy.
Oh, I need some candied plums, guys.
Have a network of whispers.
The eyes were lighting up at everything.
Yeah.
The candied plums. Oh, look at that huge man. Oh, if you watch them, they were just like at everything.
Sunny D.
Yeah. Sunny D, yeah. The whole thing.
Okay, and so we didn't talk about the small council scene.
Small council,
yeah. It was so pointless. So they march in there with their intimidating, you know, Gregor, Sir Gregor. They demand to... Why did they want to be a part of this small council meeting in the first place? And then they just get up and leave and they don't talk about anything anyway. So there's not a lot of governing going on in King's Landing either.
It was just an opportunity to reacquaint the audience with the figures of power in King's Landing, and that Cersei's been down and out, but she's trying to make a comeback, and Jaime's...
Except her philosophy is just about punishing those who've thought bad things about her.
Right.
that seems to be her goal for holding on to power.
She has a compelling argument with the murder of Myrcella. In terms of, you know, action must be taken.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take our enemy seriously kind of thing. But Sir Kevin Lannister wasn't hearing it in that moment.
Cersei and company this week were actually kind of not extending an olive branch necessarily, but saying, you know, let's kind of consider working together in some sense. And then everyone else was petulant and was like, well, we're going to take our meeting and go home.
They do seem to have more rational motivations this season than they have in the past.
But we see that's kind of going to be, well, I guess we get Lady Olenna back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She's back, and she was, you know, and invited back.
And we have Tommen getting his head twisted around by yet another senior figure.
The High Sparrow, really.
Anybody who comes into contact with the king.
I thought something was... The whole sit down thing just had me on edge. Just anything like that in the show now, I'm just like, ooh, don't do whatever someone wants you to do, because something bad.
The High Sparrow got in Tommen's head, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tommen was ready to just let his guards start chopping people. And not that that's his nature, but, I mean, it was tense there for a second.
Yeah.
And stabbier hands might have prevailed.
Stabbier heads.
We also do get the knowledge I think there is, well, from the Qyburn scene, with that there is going to be a trial by combat.
Yes, at which Cersei and Jaime are eagerly anticipating.
Right.
Just because Sir Gregor is so scary.
Yeah.
I would think that Jaime would... Even in his diminished state, out of his, you know, former chivalric honor, wanted to be the one to defend her. But
he's not so good.
Maybe he's not that dumb, But I mean, it seems weird that, especially when he has such disdain for the Mountain, that he would, you know, be excited at the prospect of him defending Cersei's honor.
See, I don't. After the whole relationship that he developed with Brienne. And
he's regressing
treatment,
now, right?
He's totally regressing. Where is his loyalty to Cersei coming from?
A lifelong love.
Come on.
So
basically all the growing he did in the last two seasons is just gone?
It's certainly clouded by the death of his daughter. Well, that's a recent one.
Cersei and
that's
Jaime true. Are better now than they have been for like three seasons. I mean, she was fucking furious with him before and just spurning anything that had to do with him when he came back, and she was mad that he was gone in the first place, mad that he came back, just mad at everything. So, and they're getting along well
right, because she needs him now.
Well, whatever the reason, you're right.
See, I want to like Jaime, but Cersei, she's
poison the well for him.
Can't like anybody that likes Cersei that much.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
The high, or what's the... High Sparrow. The High Sparrow gave more reason to like Cersei this week than anyone has in a long time with the Mother's Day speech.
Right. That's right. It was a Mother's Day speech.
A lot of, yeah, there's Cersei the mother and then the mother, one mother, of the seven. Mother.
God.
Let's see. I feel like we've missed something. There's so much happened.
A lot did happen.
Well, so we learned that Sam and Gilly are going to...
Old Town?
No,
Horn Hill.
Are they going to go to Horn Hill? They didn't get to Horn Hill in the books.
That scene. Fuck.
Puke bucket scene?
Yeah.
Why has Gilly been almost like a shrew sort of character the entire time we've known her? She's always said Sam was doing the wrong thing, even when he's trying to help and defend them. And she's never happy with any decision he's ever made. And then she wasn't happy with that one. And then she suddenly was just like, whatever you say. You're the father of my child. I trust you. I love you. Practically said, I love you.
Because like, cool. Because he finally fucked her.
Because he... Is it because he was puking?
No.
Did he fuck her during that scene and I didn't see it?
But at least once at the end of last season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she got awful agreeable compared to her former self. Suddenly,
she got a taste of that Tarly dick.
That's okay. We can edit that out.
Nope, keep it in.
Even
for all our viewers,
even Tormund listeners, shaking his head. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's just safe to say that they have cemented their relationship as a partnership. And that now she's playing, now that she's not seasick, she can think straight. And
well, you know, it's kind of about time. I mean, he's slain the White Walker to save her. He took her, he dropped her off at Molestown where she almost got killed. But she escaped and he helped her.
He's been a good father figure.
Survive the attack on the wall, the wildlings. I mean, jeez, give Sam a break here.
He's smart. He can read. He has his own car.
That his dad lets him use on the weekend.
We're going to take a ride up to Horn Hill.
Horny Hill.
Know what I'm saying?
It's just a hill that looks like a horn.
When she said, I would never do that to the father of our son or something, I thought he was going to say, well, that's Craster's kid. And she was going to say, not that son.
Yeah. I
But it's too soon for that.
Well, we'll see. Who knows?
I mean, could she know already? They haven't been on a boat for that long.
A woman just knows.
How many months have they been on a boat?
I wasn't even sure they were going to end up on a boat.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's fast travel, Westeros style. One scene on a boat, and then next scene could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Oh, what do we think of Dany's scene? So she's back. She's kind of, it appears she's going to be put on some sort of trial or something. It's like there's going to be a decision made.
A decision, yeah.
Apparently there's a convocation of all the Khalasars. So it's like every Dothraki in the world is here for the convention. And and there's going to be a big big kind of trial thing. But, Jorah and Dario are,
got Dario, but not Dario,
peeking out from over the rocks. So there's obviously going to be
some
rescue scene.
Right.
Going to be some swashbuckling going on.
Probably, end capped with some dragon action. I think
that's right. Drogon's got to be around.
Drogon will just swoop in and save the day.
Thanks for ruining it. What?
And those, unless somehow Drogon swoops in and she's like, hey, you Dothraki dipshits.
Yeah.
Why don't we give up on your old bullshit and you follow old Dragon Queen?
Yeah.
Let's do some kick-ass shit. I'll tell you what cities you're going to sack this year.
Yeah.
All of fucking Westeros.
Now get to building some boats.
That's right. Yeah.
Even though you know nothing about them.
Back to plan A.
Ship everybody over individually by dragon.
We can take three at a time.
One to snack on the way over, one to snack on the way back. One safely delivered.
I don't like those odds.
Screamer. I like those odds. Bats.
Well, we still haven't seen Littlefinger, though. I feel like we'll see him next week.
We saw him in the scenes for next week. Trying to explain why dropping Sansa off at Winterfell was a good idea to somebody.
To Robin.
To Robin, who... I was really hoping we would never see Robin again.
Yeah.
So creepy.
I feel like that's some producer's kid's son. That it's like... We need to stick him in a part.
All right. Well, we can speculate a little bit on where things are going. So,
We speculated John and Ramsay collision. That's what I'm speculating.
That was a light speculation.
I'm heavily speculating it now, though.
Mike's some deep speculation.
I feel like Sansa and John's encounter will lead to them all returning to Castle Black and John getting wrapped up in Castle Black business again, in spite of his initial attempt to leave.
And then Angus Young will show up and play Back in Black when they all show up. Axel will be singing.
We'll see them walk in slow-mo through the tunnel underneath the wall.
I kind of think he'll run into Sansa. He'll get the scoop about Ramsay.
About Rickon. You
know,
Well, she doesn't know about Rickon, though.
No, but word gets around fast.
Yep. Well, yeah, and I'm thinking...
I mean, I feel
even
like...
Even if she doesn't know about Rickon yet, she'll know that Ramsay's at Winterfell. That's where he's at right now, right?
Because isn't Ramsay going to want to use Rickon to basically negotiate to get Sansa back somehow, maybe?
As soon as he has someone to parlay with.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Enough already to convince Jon Snow to go back and get Russell up a... army of wildlings.
Well, Ramsay's deal with Umber was, I need your help to tackle these wildlings.
Yeah.
So he's heading to the north gift to start fucking up wildlings. But he's also got Rickon. I don't know to what end. I mean, but as far as they're concerned, Jon Snow is the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch and therefore an enemy because he's a Stark. So I think they're going to try to, you know, use that to their advantage against John. Say, you know, lay down, or let us kill these wildlings, or lay down your arm, or who knows what the fuck he's going to do. But I don't know that it matters. I mean, as long as John and Sansa and Brienne hook up with Tormund and the Night's Watch, they can put a stop to Ramsay before the White Walkers arrive and things get heavy.
Are we going to see anything north of the wall? I mean, nobody's up there. Like, well, I mean, Bran is, but that's about
somebody's
it.
Somebody's up there. Somebody's.
Well, I mean, are we going to have a...
Are we going to see Cold Hands?
There is no Cold Hands on the show.
I know. At least not yet.
Cold Feet.
cold Finger?
Cold Hands got cold feet.
Cold Finger.
We saw Theon and Yara in...
So he obviously gets back to Pike.
Right.
Right?
Oh, in the preview.
The previews.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like she was like, oh, I tried to save you, and you just cowered and...
Why would Theon feel the need to go back to Pike
That's not clear to me.
He can't go anywhere but there, right?
I think, yeah, I mean, I feel like the Theon of the book is going to take the black, because... He has no other... I mean, he's so without honor.
Right.
If he doesn't sort of seek some absolution to start a new life, then he has no choice but to die.
Right.
And the vow of abstinence, no big deal to him.
Yeah. I mean,
is he penisless?
He is.
Officially?
Yeah, I think so.
Poor fucker.
Well, it's... Maybe that's why he's going back to Pike, to get his penis.
They hold it.
They mailed it to him. Mailed. Ravened it.
Maybe Melisandre can bring it back to life.
What's the spell for penis reattachment?
The Lord of Light smiles on your dick. He brought it back for a purpose.
And then she throws it in the fire. Oh. No. How she gets her. What are we going to see with? What are we going to get out of Dorne coming up?
Nothing next week that we saw.
Yeah.
Who knows what those snaky fuckers want to do at this point?
Jamie did acknowledge that the women were in charge.
Right.
He said that they're running the city now.
Right.
which we had a question last week about that.
That's right. We were wondering who's in charge of Dorne now.
Apparently Gynocracies and all that.
There's nobody left in Dorne to be sort of a POV on what they're up to other than just seeing them go, let's kill everybody. Let's get revenge. That's not compelling.
Well, then they'll do something compelling.
What could they do? We theorized that who turned out to be the young Ned Stark was going to be associated with them somehow, but that he might have been Quentin Martell.
Right, we were
way off mark. I was wrong about that.
Tyrion asked Varys if he had birds that could get to the three cities.
Right.
I don't know where Varys got birds at this point. Didn't he just like show up in town last week?
Well, he just, you know, he has them. He's magic.
And the birds...
But I mean, I think he meant like actual birds, right?
No, I think he meant
spies. Like ravens. Spies. Oh, okay.
No, I think he always
means they don't spies. Have ravens over there.
Yeah. Don't they?
No. That's a Maester Westeros tradition. They'll have to send owls. Harry Potter style. I don't know. I mean...
could go anywhere at this point.
Things... It's all good.
I'm fine with it. This episode was really good.
There's enough interesting loose ends again to... that we don't have any idea about.
Everything rang pretty true to me as what a good direction for the show, except for my personal disappointment at Shaggy Dog's death.
That's a blow. That's a hard blow. I want there to be more direwolf.
I think maybe that will always be a shortcoming of the show, because the direwolves, when they do show up, just stand there. So
and get killed.
At least. Ghost was in the scene when John came back. The Ghost should have had some interaction with John.
Totally. He was just placid.
Upon his resurrection. I mean, warging aside.
Yeah, they still haven't really done or even hinted at John being a warg, have they? In the show.
I guess not. No, I don't think so. I guess not. In the books, for sure, but on the show, no. And I feel like we should have had a moment where Ghost... would have felt the loss of Shaggy Dog. That would have been a cool thing to see.
Have they done anything with that? The connection between the wolves on the show?
I don't think so.
When Lady got killed. There might have been something when Lady got killed.
There was no disturbance in the Force that I remember.
Yeah, they've demysticized the wolves tremendously in the show. They have no mystical significance whatsoever.
Yeah. Maybe they'll bring it back, but I guess it's not easy to convey, and they've got enough other story to focus on that they just let that fall away.
It'll be left for the books if they ever get finished.
Well, I think that pretty much sums it up this week.
Yeah.
And plenty of cool season remains. So give your mothers a big hug. Thank the mother. Constant, incessant mothering.
Do not call your mother the crone. That's rude.
All right.
See you next week.